Every Wednesday, I go to the charter school that we have in our little town, and I teach a culinary arts class to the secondary students. So we've been doing all kinds of crazy things. You know, of course, I'm going to bring my unorthodox, unconventional, kind of old-fashioned philosophy into that class. So they're getting things that are definitely above and beyond a typical culinary arts curriculum. But anyway, this past couple of weeks, we've been working on a lot of different baking and baked goods. And most recently, we made pancakes from scratch. A lot of the kids had only ever used a pancake mix. And so I was excited to show them how easy it is to make pancakes. And of course, I brought my whole wheat grain mill, because why not? And I wanted just to introduce them to this idea of you can start weaving in different flours into these recipes. And so when I brought this out to the kids, a lot of them didn't know what a wheat berry was. They had no idea you could grind this strange little grain and turn it into flour. And we talked about the differences. And I was like, you know, what are your guys' perceptions of whole wheat? What do you think of it? And they're like, it's gross. You know, they're like, we've tried it before in different recipes and it's disgusting and it tastes bad. So I'm like, you know, noted. I think I'm going to change your mind, but also I, you know, kind of tucked it away in the back of my own mind that I think that's the perception that a lot of people have around whole wheat. And that was definitely my perception around whole wheat. I've shared a little bit of my story here on the show before, but my mom got really into whole grains in the 90s, kind of the first wave of that whole trend. And so she would do 100% whole wheat loaves in her Bosch mixer. And she tried so hard and they just weren't great, you know, and not her fault. It just, she was using this hard red wheat berries and it was no all-purpose flour to cut it or help it. And, you know, we'd make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with that and it would have just about choke you. And so for many years, I had the same perception as the kids in my class. Like, it's not great. It doesn't taste good. It's the texture's kind of coarse and miserable. But I've really reframed that in recent years. And if you are on my newsletter or you follow along on my blog, you know that I've been working on not only falling back in love with whole wheat, but also figuring out how to use it in recipes that is actually delicious in ways that my family doesn't revolt against. So I wanted to share in today's episode a framework that I created. I love a framework. I think it just simplifies information and makes things more digestible. No pun intended. But I want to share this whole wheat framework I've recently created just to help people sort through all the categories of whole wheat berries. Because it's one thing when you decide to jump into this world, but it's entirely another when you're like, okay, great. I have a grain mill maybe, or I'm going to buy one, but then where the heck do I get the wheat and what type of wheat berry do I get? Because there's a lots of terms. So we're going to demystify that today, simplify it down, and actually, I know by the end of this episode, you're going to have a game plan for moving forward. So let's do this. Welcome to the Old Fashioned On Purpose podcast. This is the show where we look at what we have left behind as we have raced towards progress as a culture and how we can get the good parts back. I'm your host, Jill Winger, and I have been homesteading way before it was cool, since back in 2008 when we bought a fixer-upper farmhouse, and we had no idea that that would change our lives for the better in every way possible. So I'm really passionate about not only teaching practical homestead skills without the fluff, but also helping people understand the deeper root behind these cravings they're feeling, these callings they're feeling, and why getting back to an old-fashioned lifestyle is so good for us as humans in mind, body, and soul. So, this is a topic we have talked about a little bit on the show today, and we'll try to drop some of the other episodes that are related in the show notes. We've had some really good guests. We had some heritage grain experts from here in Wyoming. We had the author of Sourdough by Science on, where she is so brilliant, and she talked about why sourdough works and why it doesn't and how whole grains relate to that. So we're going to drop some of those down in the show notes. But today, I'm really excited just to share this framework with you. All right. So I think one of the best ways to really start educating yourself in this world of whole wheat and to help take some of the confusion out of it is to start by sorting through all the different types. Because there's not only different varieties of wheat berries, like almost species, if you will. They're not species, but if you want to think about that in that way, you can. But there's also different categories. There's red and white, hard, soft, winter, spring. Like there's all different sorts of things to consider there. So I created this framework. I'm calling it the whole framework. WHOLE. It's a acronym. And so I have this in an infographic and kind of broken down on a blog post. We're also going to put that in the show notes if you want to have a visual representation, because if you're anything like me, I actually absorb more technical info visually, not with hearing it. So W stands for the wheat season. H stands for the hue or the color. O stands for the origin or variety. I had to get a little creative because I was trying to make it fit in this acronym, so bear with me. L is level of hardness, and E is extraction. So let's break each of those down, and by the time we're all said and done, you're going to have this down pat and be ready to start grinding. So W, first off, let's start with the wheat season. This is a category you may not hear as much as some of the others, but primarily we're going to be dealing with either winter wheat or spring wheat. And that just is referring to the season in which those crops are planted. So spring wheat is going to be sown in the spring and harvested in the fall, right? So it makes sense. And then winter wheat is sown in the winter and harvested in the summer. And I would say I hear references to season generally more in a local or a farm level. So I actually grew up in an area of the country that had a lot of wheat farming. And then we do have some dryland wheat farming here in Wyoming, believe it or not. There's a place kind of up on the prairie we call the Flats in our area. And traditionally for the last 100 years or so or more, they have been dryland wheat farming up there. And so pretty sure they do winter wheat. And so you'll hear farmers say, oh, the winter wheat's in, or this and that about winter wheat, spring wheat. We primarily have winter wheat in our area, but that's where I hear these references most often. I don't really see it labeled on packages or when I'm buying wheat berries in bulk. I don't see this as much, but I want you to be aware of it. So if you do see this designation, it doesn't throw you off. I don't think it's going to be a huge consideration that you need to worry about in terms of how it's going to affect your baked goods. I will say that spring wheat has generally a little less protein than winter wheat, so it's going to be preferable for cakes and pastries, whereas winter wheat has a little bit higher protein, so it's better for breads and pasta, right? And so I'm going to invite you to kind of think about baked goods broken down into these two categories. I mean, there's obviously more categories, but for the sake of today, let's think about it in two categories, and this will help the rest of your kitchen adventures as well. So when we have baking items, things like pie crusts, pastries, cakes. We're not trying to have a big gooey gluten development there, right? We want those things to be more crumbly. We want a certain texture. We don't want our pie crust to develop any sort of gluten, because then they get tough and chewy, right? Whereas we have our yeast breads, our rolls, and our buns, and that's where we are getting that protein content. We're getting that gluten to really come together, and we want that spring and that rise and that formation of the gluten strands. And so that's why you may have those different protein contents. If you were like an artisan baker who was really picky about things, you may be hunting down those different categories. But for the average home baker, I'd say don't worry about the season too much. Just be aware if you hear farmers talking about it. That's what it is referring to. Okay, so that was W. Our next letter in our acronym is H, which stands for hue or the color. Now, it's a little bit of a misnomer because we call them either red or white. You're going to hear that quite a bit. You'll see that in storefronts if you're buying wheat berries or you're buying them in bulk, whatever. So we call them red or white, but you're not going to really be able to see that as much with a naked eye. Like if you're really well-versed in wheat berry identification, you can probably tell the red berries are just a little more darker brown. The white ones are lighter brown or tan, but it's not super obvious. I have to still label my jars in my cupboard because if I don't have them labeled, I'm going to second guess myself and not know which is which. So we have red and white, and this is really a common labeling of wheat berries. So red are slightly darker in color. Like I said, they're going to have a little bit more protein and a nuttier flavor. I just think of them having a little bit more of a robust flavor. Not always super noticeable, but just a little bit stronger. White wheat berries are not actually white, but they are paler in color. They're a little bit more mild. And so oftentimes if people are brand new to whole wheat and they're like, oh, I don't like the taste. It's too much. It's too intense. I'm like, try white wheat, just because it's slightly milder. Now, I want you to be able to keep this separate because this is really important. white whole wheat flour. So that means flour that has been ground from white wheat berries is still whole wheat flour. So just because it has the word white in the title, don't confuse it with white all-purpose flour, right? If you get that mixed up, you're going to be sorely disappointed in the final product because it's still whole wheat. It's still going to behave like whole wheat, and it's still going to give you those results in your baked goods, which we'll talk about in a minute in terms of less rise, less spring, heavier texture, et cetera, right? So it has not been sifted. It has not been processed. It's just that designation of the wheat berry. So just keep that straight in your mind. I know it gets a little confusing, but the more you work through this and read about it and use the different berries, it gets easier. I promise. Okay, so we have WHO is our next letter, and that is origin or variety. So this one can get a little bit hairy because there are many, many, many types of wheat, and it's impossible to list them all out, and it probably would be more overwhelming than helpful to go into all the different types of wheat berries. Okay, so most wheat crops grown in the United States, and I'm not going to say this correctly, so bear with me. I'll spell it for you just in case you're nerdy and you want to Google it. Triticum aestivum. So it's that last word is aestivum. And that's kind of the standard run-of-the-mill variety that you're going to be most accustomed to eating. That's what's grown and comes together as processed and generally turned into all-purpose flour. But there are a lot of other species that just because we don't cultivate it regularly in the United States, or it's not our main flour variety, doesn't mean they don't have a lot of value. We just often find, like so often in industrial agriculture, all the cool heritage strains get pushed to the side in favor of the one that's been hybridized, and the one that's been really marketed and adapted to commercial industrial ag. So a lot of home bakers, because usually if you're baking at home, you're a little bit unconventional, you're a little old fashioned, there's a huge interest in exploring these different varieties. And I think that's an awesome idea. I think it's really fun to do that. You're going to get a lot of different attributes, but know that they don't always translate one-to-one across the board. Meaning if you have a really good bread recipe that uses hard white wheat berries, it's not going to be the same if you use einkorn or spelt. So you kind of have to know these categorizations. It's not that you have to have each one memorized down to the T, but you just kind of need to have an idea of what you're dealing with. So most of the flour you purchase at the store, it falls into that category I just mentioned that I'm not going to try to say again, but there's different cultivars within that. So most of the all-purpose flour you get is going to be some sort of hard red winter wheat that's been processed or sifted. And there's a bunch of different kinds within that. There's prairie red, turkey red, red fife. You'll see those names bumble around the internet if you're Googling, but they still all fall under that hard red winter wheat umbrella, right? So don't let that confuse you. I like to think of things in buckets or pillars or categories. That's just how my brain organizes information. So those are still under this one umbrella. And we get into these other heritage grains, ancient grains, sometimes they're called, they're under a different umbrella. Okay. So let's go through a few of those here. I think the first one that gets the most attention and has been, the most popular over the years is einkorn. You've probably come across that if you've been Googling this at all. And that is a species that originated in the Fertile Crescent. It is very much different than our modern wheat. And we have to think about our modern strains that are now, you know, what's filling our grocery stores. They have been changed considerably over the years to handle, you know, being grown in large quantities. I know when I was talking to our heritage grain expert, she came on the show a couple years ago. She said, you know, we have bred the wheat down so there's not as much straw. So you have less straw. So there's been a lot of things done to it to make it more palatable for industrial ag. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's bad. A lot of times when people go to Europe, they say, oh, I can eat bread there and it doesn't make me feel bloated, or it doesn't, fire up my gluten sensitivity issue. And I really think that that is just because they're different varieties. We're not as accustomed to, our bodies kind of they're not sensitized to them. And a lot of those varieties have not been hybridized like they have in the US. Hybridization isn't necessarily a bad thing, right? We can do that even in our homesteads. It's not the same as genetic modification or anything like that. But I think the biggest issue is that we've all become sensitized, not all of us, but a lot of us has become sensitized to those varieties because they're in so much of our food, not just bread, but, you know, they add wheat derivatives to so many processed food items. I think our bodies are kind of like, enough is enough. So if you have experienced gluten sensitivity or some sort of intolerance, you may be able to handle a flour like einkorn. You may not. It just depends on your body's situation. Einkorn still has gluten in it. A lot of people assume it, you know, they get confused and say, it doesn't have gluten. I'm like, no, it does have gluten. It's just a little bit different than the gluten you're going to find in our modern wheat because it hasn't been changed as much over the years. Mm-hmm. I like using einkorn. I've tried whole wheat einkorn. I've tried all purpose. I love the flavor. It's a nuttier, more robust flavor. It gives this wonderful golden color to baked goods, but there is a learning curve with einkorn. Number one, you're going to have to build longer rise times into your baking schedule if you're using einkorn. So einkorn still has gluten in it, but because it's different, it's not as strong. It takes a while for it to rise. And even then, it's probably never going to rise as much as your standard typical flours that you're used to using. So if you're waiting for that dough to double in size like your other flours do, you're going to be waiting a long time with einkorn. Another thing to consider is to watch the liquids that you're adding to your einkorn flour recipe. So einkorn is going to absorb the liquids slower than modern flour. So what can happen is you mix everything together and it's like, oh, it doesn't look right. It doesn't look right. So you add more liquid, you add more flour, and you end up with this gloppy mess because what you really needed to do was just wait for that absorption to happen. So you may need to add a little bit less liquid. You may need to give your dough a little bit of time to sit before you start mixing. Just keep that in mind, especially if you have a regular flour recipe and you're trying to convert it into einkorn. It's possible, but you just have to play with those liquids in that time a little bit. I would say the best place to start playing around with einkorn would be in quick breads or things like pancakes or waffles that don't need that gluten development. They don't need, you know, the doubling in size. And then you can kind of start to figure things out there before you get into actual yeast breads or sourdough with einkorn. You can 100% do sourdough einkorn, but that takes a little more feel. So kind of work up to that would be my recommendation. Okay, our next category would be spelt, or not category rather, our next variety within our category is spelt. It's also an ancient grain, been cultivated for many, many thousands of years. It also has a nuttier, sweeter flavor, adds a lot of depth. And that's what you're going to see kind of across the board with these heritage varieties. They just have more flavor and more nuance of flavor, which I think is something we just lost as we've hybridized. Spelt is maybe a teeny bit more forgiving than einkorn. You can use it more as a one-to-one substitute in recipes. Again, you may need to reduce the liquids a little bit with spelt, just like you did with einkorn, because it's going to absorb moisture at a different rate. And then the biggest thing with spelt to remember is do not overknead it. I remember the first time I was trying to use it in a recipe, I used, I think, 50, 60% spelt in this recipe. And I just kneaded this dough like I normally did, and it got stickier and stickier. And I kept adding more flour, and it got stickier and stickier. It was like this monster in the bowl. And I realized that I had worked it too much. And so spelt's good for like the no-knead type of recipes. You can knead it, but you have to be mindful of what you're doing because it will turn into that sticky, unmanageable mess sooner versus later. So just keep that in mind. The gluten is more temperamental. A really good place to start with spelt would be to use, you know, take your typical recipe, maybe that you know how to make well with all-purpose flour. Start by putting 25% spelt in there, and then you can bump it up to 50%. And you can get away with a lot of different flours that way by just subbing up to 50%. It's not going to affect things as much. You get the flavor, you get the texture, but you don't have as many of the complications of the moisture and the gluten and all of that. Okay. Kamut is our next variety within this category. Also another ancient grain. Also it goes by the name Khorasan. So you might see that used interchangeably. It is a little bit of a bigger wheat berry and it looks a lot like rice. So again, it's got a golden hue. It's going to give a nuttier flavor and texture to your baked goods. It contains more protein, but less gluten than other flours. So that's something to consider if you are gluten sensitive. Still has gluten in it, but less. So that might be something your digestive system thinks is handy or thinks is helpful. Again, like we talked about previously, because of that delicate gluten structure, you're going to be dealing with some rise differences. So potentially add other wheat flour with the kamut if you're trying to get those really big springs and those really big rises. And so it's going to be pretty similar to spelt in that regard, just kind of how you're going to treat it and handle it. Okay, and then the last variety I have here, because we could really go all day about this, but I don't want to make your eyes roll back in your head, Immer. Immer also goes by the name farro, and it has some of the highest levels of vitamins, minerals, fiber, and protein out of all of the wheat berry options. So it's a little bit of an easier dough to work with. It absorbs flour more quickly and comes together as a dough a little bit more easily. It's going to be a little more dense than what you're used to. So keep that in mind. And it's just another good one to mix. And so you're going to kind of, once you start playing with these, you know, maybe order a little bag online or get it from your local bulk food co-op. Just start playing. Mix it half and half, mix it 25-75, just start to get to know it. That's going to be the best way to do this versus trying to have all that information perfect up front. Trial and error, I think, is the best method in this case. All right, so that was a little bit of a bigger category. We have our H, which is our wheat season. We have our hue. We have our O, which is our origin or variety. And now we're going to get into the level of hardness. Now, this one is a very, very important category. And this is one you do want to pay attention to. So there are two types of hardness when we're referring to wheat. There's hard and soft. Okay. So like I mentioned previously, hard red winter wheat is the most common wheat grown in the United States. Hard wheat berries contain more protein and gluten, which means that's the one we're going to use for our breads. We need that gluten structure to get our yeast breads or anything we're doing with a really good rise. We need to have that amount of gluten. Soft wheat berries contain less gluten and more starch. So that's what a lot of people use to make pastry flour, pie crusts, cookies, things like that. So anything that doesn't have yeast in it, you could probably get away using a soft wheat berry in that. Again, these look the same in wheat berry form. So if you get both kinds, label them well because you will not be able to tell them apart if you're just looking at them. Poke at one and make an indentation more than the other. It's just something you have to understand from the farmer or the seller. Okay. And then finally, E is for extraction. So this actually isn't a categorization of whole wheat flour. It's not something you're going to see in reference to how wheat berries are labeled, but it is a term that you will see a lot in baking blogs and books. And so I wanted to explain it here just so it doesn't throw you off. So extraction indicates the percentage of the wheat kernel that ends up in the final flour, right? So if you're familiar at all with the process of how all-purpose flour is made, we grind up the whole wheat just like you would do in your home, but then the factory removes the germ and the bran. That's what gives us that lighter, fluffier flour that we're all very accustomed to. So with different levels of extraction, that's going to give us different amounts of that wheat berry, the whole wheat berry left in the final flour. I would say most home bakers who are just starting out, you're not going to have to worry about this. You're not going to see it referenced a lot. It's really something you see more in the kind of higher level recipes or recipes that are for people who are a little more well-versed in the world of bread. So whole wheat flour, that is something we would call 100% extraction because it contains the entire wheat kernel, the bran, the germ, the endosperm. 100% of the wheat berry remains in the flour. So we call that 100% extraction. Now, high extraction flour means that a large percentage of the wheat berry has been extracted. And so that means that that extraction rate is usually 70 to 90%, meaning that 70 to 90% of the original kernel is in the flour. And that's the one we're going to see most often or use most often when we're making bread, even if we don't realize that's what we're using. That's the category it would fall under. And then finally, we have low extraction flour, and it is made by milling wheat to remove most of the bran and the germ. It's going to have a finer texture because we're not going to have all those coarse pieces in there. And that extraction rate is typically below 70%. Okay. So again, extraction is probably the one on this list that you need to worry about the least, but I wanted you to be aware of what that's referring to. Because I know the first time I saw that in a recipe, I'm like, excuse me, what? Like, I don't know what you're talking about. So just be aware. All right. So that was a lot of information. We have wheat season, we have colors, we have levels of hardness, we have different varieties, we have extraction. Like, where do you start? Let's say you're just a home baker, a homesteader, a home cook, and you're just like, I just need some whole wheat flour. Where the heck do I even begin? So I'm going to recommend that if you're getting into whole wheat flour, you're at the beginning of your journey, is just to start with hard red wheat berries. And I'm going to point you in that direction because it's the easiest to find. I like to get mine from Azure Standard. I'm going to drop that link in the show notes. It's a bulk buying co-op. They deliver in trucks around the country. So you don't go into a store and you basically have to join a drop and they come once a month. So it's kind of a pain to get set up with them. But once you're set up, it's a sweet gig. Like, we have the truck come to our house. We're a drop point and I get a lot of my natural bulk foods there that I cannot find locally, or they're really expensive locally. So Azure is a really, really good option, and you can get all sorts of wheat berries, spelt, einkorn, hard red, hard white, soft. I think they have some soft varieties as well, in like little bags, like 1 pound bags or 50 pound bags, which is awesome. In the past, I've also reached out to local wheat farmers. We have some organic growers in our area, and I've asked if they have any. It really kind of depends on the season because they're not really geared towards selling little batches to people like me. They're going into those big bulk sales, like industrial sales. So sometimes they'll have a little bit left in their grain bins or their silos or whatever, and I can ask them if I can have a bag. The downfall sometimes to that is your local farmers are going to be growing generally more in that industrial category. So they're not going to have a bunch of these more artisan type of options. Like for us, I get hard, red, winter wheat, and that's it. There is nothing else, which is fine, right? But just something to consider. So Azure, local farmers, sometimes your bulk food co-ops, if you have a good natural food store in your area, might have some options. There's other places online. I'm not really well-versed in where to hunt all that down. But it's easier than it used to be to find whole wheat berries. And I think one of the biggest benefits to learning how to cook with whole grain flour is that it's much better for preservation in terms of, you know, all-purpose flour will go stale fairly quickly. You can't go stock up on 100 pounds of all-purpose flour unless you're going to use it pretty quick. Whereas wheat berries, that's a seed and it's designed to last and still be good for a very long period of time. So if I buy a bucket of wheat berries, I can keep it in a cool, dark place for many years, grind it when I need it, and I'll have very nutritious flour that is not the same as, you know, trying to store flour in bulk. So I think that's one of the biggest benefits to learning how to use it. Like I said, there is a learning curve. No matter what type of wheat berry you use, you have to kind of play with it. I didn't understand this until I did that interview with, I think Carolyn Newman is her name. She wrote Sourdough by Science. And she explained that the reason our whole wheat doughs behave so differently, well, there's a lot of reasons, but one of the biggest is because that bran is left in the flour. When the gluten tries to develop as it's rising, the bran is like a little knife shard that cuts through the gluten pieces. And that's why if you've ever played with this, you know, your whole wheat dough doesn't rise as happily. It doesn't rise as big. And so you have to do some things to counteract that. Sometimes you can add more gluten. Sometimes you can do your liquids different. Sometimes you need sparingly. So you're not doing as much cutting. You're not helping that cutting process, but it just takes a little practice. And we do have a lot of resources on the blog that, again, I'll put those in the show notes. There's going to be a lot of stuff in the show notes on this episode that will teach you just some of those basic principles so you can start playing around. But all in all, I think this is something, if you're looking to up-level your home cooking, you're looking to buy in bulk more, you're looking to get back to the basics on an even greater level than you're already doing with your homemade bread, this is a really fun place to start. It's as much of an art, I think, as it is a science. Like, you've got to understand what's happening on that molecular level, but also there's just an element of feel and art, for lack of a better word, that goes into this that I think is really gratifying. It also gives you an opportunity to make some spectacular mistakes, which I have absolutely done. But once you get your stride and you figure out what you need for your climate and your kitchen and the humidity levels in your area and the flour you have available to you, like, it's really, really fun. So this is a worthwhile skill to learn if you're looking for a challenge in the kitchen. So I hope that was helpful to you today. I know that was a little more info intense than some of our other episodes, but I want to be able to bring some of this practical how-to info to you to help you really start to catch your stride in the kitchen and make some steps in the direction that you want to head with your home cooking. So a couple of reminders, be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more resources. I have a lot of information on this on the blog, theprairiehomestead.com. You can just go there, type in whole wheat or flour or bread. It's going to pull up a ton of stuff. I have a lot of previous podcast episodes on this. And a quick reminder, if you're not on my email list, I want to invite you to join me there because I send this sort of information out every Wednesday. I email once a week. I try to make it as high value as possible. I get a lot of really, not to toot my own horn, but I get a lot of really good response and feedback from my newsletter because it's like me actually writing you a letter. It's not just promotional marketing stuff written by an AI bot. It's like it's really me really writing to the crew who's on that list. So I send out information like what we talked about today, sometimes different essays and opinion pieces and thought pieces. And it's a really wonderful place to connect and get this information first before anybody else does. So if you want to join me there, you can go to theprairiehomestead.com/letter to join. It's completely free. I'm not going to spam you. I don't sell your email address, all those things. But come join me there if you're not already. So again, hope that was a helpful episode, friends. I wish you great adventures in the kitchen as you start to master whole wheat flour. And thanks for listening. We'll talk again on the next episode of the Old Fashioned on Purpose podcast.